Thank you, worship team. Man, so thankful for the worship team. Man, we love you guys so much. So appreciative of y'all. As I said last week, Lori and I were home with the COVID, and we just we're in our living room just worshiping with the worship team, and it's just a blessing. You guys are such a blessing. That second song that we sang this morning, Noah wrote that song. That was so good. That's another song that he's written. I think what's three now, Noah, and it's three now, and so that is so awesome. You know what your job is in that? Is to create a garden that can flourish in. Is for this house to be a garden that can flourish in. And that's our responsibility. And not only that, but just, man, everything. Those kids that just went upstairs and the people, thank you, Nick, the people that listen to the podcast or watching the live stream right now and all of that, that we're facilitating an atmosphere where faith can transcends physical presence, although I feel like physical presence is important, but it transcends that. You know, last week, man, I was just stirred and moved and just engaged in such a place of worship. You know, I told a worship team, I said, man, I felt like hammered dog mess last week, but I still, it came into a place of just engagement and worship with the Lord. And so I just thank you guys for that. If somebody will catch, James, you catch those lights back there. Hey, man, I want to... I got a lot of good stuff stirring in me this morning, and so I'm going to try to be one of my continual prayers is just to be a good communicator. Any speaker that comes up, any minister that comes up and tries to minister the word, I think one of our biggest challenges is to communicate it to you the way God's stirring in us with it. And this is my first service in 2021. We were here right at the end of 20, and then we were on vacation for a week, and then we got coronavirus, and so this is my first word for 21. So I wanna talk a little bit and a little bit of reflection on the season that we find ourselves still currently in. It's not just everybody's like, oh, thank goodness 2020's gone. Let's kiss it goodbye and let's move on to 21. Well, if you hadn't noticed, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. In our area, it's as prevalent or more prevalent now than it has been at any point. There's still restrictions going on. I can't travel abroad to many countries that I would like to travel abroad to right now. And in these restrictions, it's a season that's been challenging, and a lot of people view the restrictions as something is totally negative. And I want to talk about things that are revealed and things that are birthed during seasons of restriction. Obviously, we've got a restrictions because of the pandemic, and I'm not talking about government restrictions. I'm not talking about travel restrictions. I'm not talking about just that. But a season of restrictions where things they dictate or have a strong influence on the way we do life and the way we live life. And so I want to talk about things that are revealed and birthed in a season of restriction as I reflect on 2020 and where we are in 2021. I chose this morning to use the scripture out of 1 Samuel. I want to talk about Hannah, and I want to talk about Samuel. I want to talk about Elkanah. I could just as easily talk about Daniel. I could just as easily talk about Nehemiah. I could just as easily talk about the Apostle John on the Isle of Patmos, or I could just as easily talk about the Apostle Paul in his prison epistles. All of these were things and people that flourished in some type of restriction that was placed on them. And I believe in 2020, I don't think that God caused, I know God didn't cause the pandemic. God did not cause COVID. But I know that Romans 8:28 says all things work to good to them that love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. And so I know God works in all things. And so we can look and we can see a lot of bad stuff that's happening, a lot of bad stuff going on. I don't know what the death counts are now in the U.S. I want to say it's over 300,000. It might be 400,000. There's a lot of death. One thing about us having the coronavirus and having a, you know, everything's relative. We didn't have to spend any time in the hospital, but it kicked our tail for about 10 days. And so it causes us to be more empathetic with other people, because we come in and we don't know what other people are going through. This year we actually had a record year business-wise, but there are a lot of people that the pandemic, it caused them to go out of business. And so I have to look at these seasons and not just look at them from exactly where I'm at, but look at them from other people's viewpoint, other people's shoes and all of this. So, you know, I want to come from that light. I want to look at Hannah and Samuel and Elkanah and some lessons that we've learned. And then I want us to really consider what God is revealing to us in the midst of this season or in 2020. And look at the potential of what can be birthed out of this, okay? I made a statement real early in the pandemic when all of the social restrictions were real at a height, I would say. And I saw a lot of positive that came out of that, I'll be honest with you. Because I can't tell you how many people I have talked to in the last especially 5 years, and they talk about how out of control their life is. They say, my life is so chaotic. You know, my kids are in travel ball, and my kids are doing this, and my kids are doing that, and all I do is constantly juggle my schedule. And I'm somewhere every night, and a lot of times we're split up. Me and Lori went through a season of this when our kids were in travel ball, too. She would be in North Georgia at a tournament, and I'd be at South Georgia with a tournament with one of them. And we just saw such a split and juggling and all of this. But it's got even amplified so much more in the last several years. And I talked to so many people in the last 5 years, and they said, my life is chaotic, my schedule is chaotic, and I don't have time for, in a sense, I don't have time for life. I don't have time for my spouse. I really don't have time for my kids. I'm ushering. I'm a good Uber driver. I take them from point A to point B and all of this. I don't have time for church life. I don't have time for, because, you know, Sunday's the only day that's not totally chaos. And so that's the day I want to spend at my place and relaxing and all of these things. And we allowed culture to create this whirlwind of a lifestyle, and the pandemic caused that to cease. And I saw it as a real plus in that sense. And I made the statement several times out there on the front lawn as we had some outdoor services. And I said, if you revert your life back when this is over, if you revert your life back to exactly the way it was before, you're an idiot. I know that's strong language, but that's just the way I communicate. I said, if you revert your life back to the chaos that it was, then you're an idiot. Because I looked at these people and I saw despair on their faces. I saw frustration on them in talking with them, people that I was in relationship with. And they said, I feel like a hamster running on the little wheel, and I don't know how to get off. And restrictions have a way of causing us to stop and to look and to see where we are, to find out a lot about ourselves, to find out a lot about our relationships and all of that. And so I want us to come in, and I'm not saying celebrate the COVID, but I'm saying find the good out of restrictions, find God working out of restrictions that are on our life. I've got about 6 pages of notes here, and we won't go through all of this, but I just thought about the restrictions that are in place, the travel restrictions. We're planning on going to Argentina in a couple months. It's still shut down right now. I hope we get to go. We were planned on 4 mission trips to Honduras last year, and some of y'all were planning, had airline tickets to go in June, I think it was, we were going. And all that was shut down, and we didn't get to go to Honduras but one trip last year, and we had planned on doing 4. So we've seen these travel restrictions, the social engagements. For so long we weren't able to do church, or we didn't feel like it was wise to do church. You know, we had outside services, and then we came in and we did podcasts for many, many weeks. And then we started having in person, and then we saw some flare ups. And, you know, I don't think it was associated with church, but nonetheless, there were people in the church that had contracted COVID. And so we went back to online and all of that. So it changed our social engagements. It changed how we interact with each other. Worship conferences and things like that, concerts, different large thing venues. You know, we canceled our, or had to, they canceled the worship conference that we go to every year out in Los Angeles. And, I always look forward to that, but it got canceled this past year. So I look at those restrictions. I think about the medical care and the restrictions from that. Many of you had surgeries that were postponed or canceled, things like that. Mine was postponed for several months, from April until September. And so we saw all of these negative impact on us. Businesses were affected in so many ways. And so many businesses, they went out of business or they struggled and things like that. So I see all of these, this wide range of impact that's come into our life. And I'm not going to say let's come in and paint a rosy picture and see it through rose-colored glasses and say everything's great and everything's wonderful, because it has been a difficult year. But I also want us to come from the perspective of God, what are you saying in the middle of this, and what are you doing in the middle of this, and what can be birthed out of this? How is my perspective changed and gotten right, more right, more in alignment with you? How has my perspective changed toward my lifestyle? How has my perspective changed toward the things that are significant to me? And I've learned a lot in this, guys. I believe, as I said a while ago, I believe that there are things that can be revealed in times of restriction that wouldn't be revealed otherwise. I believe there are things that are birthed in a time of restriction that couldn't be birthed otherwise. As I said, we're in 1 Samuel and we're looking at Hannah. How many of y'all know who Hannah is? Y'all know who Hannah is? How many of you know who Penaniah is? If it hadn't been associated with my study of this, I wouldn't have a clue. She was Hannah's counterpart. She was married to Hannah's husband, Elkanah. He had 2 wives. He lived in a polygamous society. And in that culture, it was all about an heir, and it was all about birthing sons and all of this, and that's where you found your significance. That was your lineage. That was the strength of your family and all of this. And in this story and in this situation here, we have a lady named Hannah that's married to a what I feel like is a godly man named Elkanah. And his other wife is Peninnah, and Peninnah has all of these kids. She has no problem having kids, but the thing is it has come easy for her. But the thing is we barely know Peninnah's name, and we can't name a single child that she birthed, because the Bible doesn't even bother to name a single child that she's birthed. We don't even know how many children she birthed. There's a saying that I have, and I write it on my desk calendar, not every month, but many months I'll write it on my desk calendar, and it says, what comes easy won't last long, but what lasts long won't come easy. What comes easy won't last long, but what lasts long won't come easy. And I think that's so true in many of areas of our life. We come in and we see Hannah in this place. And let's just read this scripture. We're going to be in the King James this morning. I'm going to read some verses and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this. As we're reading this, I want you to know God's not being mean to Hannah. The word, and you'll see it in this, the word actually says that the Lord had shut up her womb. Now that seems like, God, if you love me, then why is this happening to me? God, if you really love me, and we'll play that card sometimes, won't we? Because we're in a place of beloved identity. we're in a place where God has brought us as a body, as a congregation, as I believe in a larger aspect, I know as a larger aspect, to the kingdom at large, where there's this, the last several years, that God has really been revealing and pushing and establishing beloved identity above everything else. And it's not sinners in the hands of an angry God, but you're my beloved and I love you and I choose you and I embrace you and my heart is for you. And that's what we've been, that's the opposite from the doctrines that I grew up in. The doctrines that I grew up in was God was really angry with me because of my sin nature. And that by legal right, God had to judge me because of my sin nature. And God really wanted to punish me and judge me and deal with my sin nature and all of this stuff. But big brother Jesus stepped in and said, "Whoa, nope, God, you can't punish them. Here's my scars." And that created a culture and it created an atmosphere where I spent my whole early Christian life trying to meet an expectation that the Bible placed on me, trying to live up to a standard that was there for me, trying to manage sin instead of flowing in a place of beautiful relationship with Him. And so we see this text, and we see Hannah coming in a place of God actually closing up her womb, and instead of her coming in and saying, "God, what is up with this? I thought you're a God of love. You know the whole thing. If God's good, why do bad things happen to good people?" And I don't have all the answers. I don't know all of these things, but everything in my life and everything in my existence is predicated on the goodness of God. I'm not afforded, I cannot afford the luxury of going to the place of questioning the goodness of God in my life and say, "God, what's up with this? And God, what's up with that?" Because I believe and I know and I'm convinced that as I go through these things of unanswered prayers, I don't know about you guys, but one of the biggest things that I have experienced in 2020 is I have felt such a place of impotence with my prayer life. I'm just being honest with y'all. I know that ain't real comforting preaching, but I have felt so impotent in my prayer life this year because the things that I have prayed for, many of the things I've prayed for, I've not seen anything move in that. I've not seen a breakthrough in a relief of the pandemic. I've have people that I pray for on a daily basis that are dealing with cancer and things like that. I pray for Alicia every single day. And I'm like, "God, just move, and God, lift her up." I have a friend that's my age, and he's got early onset Alzheimer's already. Dementia's coming in. He's exactly my age. We're 58. And I'm like, "God," and I'm just praying. And I hadn't seen anything moving and shifting and changing in these things, you know, manifesting in these things. I'll be honest with you, man, I've just felt like my prayer life has been so impotent this year. And in the natural, you want to come in, and in the flesh, you want to come in and say, "What's the use?" And just kind of throw your hands up and say, "God's a sovereign God, and He's going to do what He wants to do." And the whole time, God's trying to teach me dependence on Him more. Not that the fact that I quit and say I can't do it and I'm not having any effect anyway, but it's the thing that I lean into Him more. I lean into Him more and say, "God, I am so dependent on You. I'm so dependent on You. I'm so dependent on Your hand moving. I'm so dependent on Your miracle working. I'm coming into a place where it's, God, we've got to learn to trust You." You know, where our faith, it matures into trust. Where we're, "God, I don't see fruit in this right now, but I trust You anyway. I don't see the answer in this right now, but I trust You anyway." And I really see this in Hannah. I believe that God had a dream for Hannah's life, and He was just waiting on Hannah to get there. God had a dream for her life, and the name of that dream was Samuel. God had a plan. Because Eli was old, he did not raise his sons up well. His two sons, Phinehas and Hophni, were corrupt men. And God said, "I've got to raise up a replacement for Eli." And His answer was Samuel. But he had to wait on Hannah to get there. I believe that God has so much in store for us that he wants to do in us and do through us, but so often he is waiting for us to get there. He's waiting for us to get to a place of maturity. He's waiting for us to get to a place of trust. He's waiting for our faith to mature. He's waiting for us to get to a place of perhaps submission. We just sang, I love that song. I sing it all the time. I'll be out on the farm and it just sticks in my head. And I'll be singing that song while I'm out working on the farm and all. And here I am. You can have it all. He's waiting for us to get to that tipping point in our lives. You know, the Word talks about in Revelation, I preached on this a few weeks ago, you remember when I talked about hidden manna and the white stone? And that there's an inheritance that God has reserved for us. Inheritance that he has reserved for us. There are things that he has stored up for us. There are things that he wants to do in us and through us. But he has to hide us or hide that in our life until we get to a point. About 3 years ago, as a family, we started entering into financial breakthrough. And it's good. It's better than the alternative. But God spoke something very clear to me as we started entering into financial breakthrough. And he made the statement, and he said, I can trust you now. I can trust you now. And the statement that he made, it's an abrasive statement to start with. Because I'm like, now, Lord, I've been in ministry for 30 years. I've never taken a salary. I've been generous. I've tithed. I've done all these things. And you can just now trust me at 55? And the clarity that he brought to that, he said, I can just now trust you with the weight that I want to put on your life. You weren't ready for the weight that I want to put on your life now. And I hope in 5 years, I hope in 2 years, Tyler, he comes in and we experience different levels, higher levels of breakthrough, and I hope he comes in and says the same thing. I can trust you now with this weight. You remember when the children of Israel came into the promised land and God told them, he said, it's all yours, but I'm not going to give it to you all at once. He said, I'm going to give you a little bit at a time because you can manage that. He said, if I gave you everything, the wild beast would overtake and overrun this. And a lot of us, we want it all right now. And God says, it's all yours, but not yet. Right now, but not yet. And there was greatness that God had in store for Hannah through Samuel. And we all know what Samuel became. He was the prophet to the nation. He was the priest of the nation. He's the one that anointed David, the king of Israel. He rightly heard, excuse me, the word of God, and he came in to David's house, and David wasn't even there. His father hadn't even invited him. And he looked at all of David's brothers, and his flesh said, surely this is the one. Lord, this has got to be the one. He's tall. He's good looking. He seems to be strong and valiant. And you said in Jesse's household, and this is Jesse's household, this is the best of Jesse's household. But he heard the voice of the Lord, and God said, that's not him. I've got another one. So much to the point that he almost offended many people, and I agree, many scholars believe that David was an illegitimate son of Jesse. And he said, do you have another? And so he went and got David and sent for him out of the fields. And David came in and the Lord said, this is the one. And Samuel had enough about him. He had enough faith. He had enough courage. He had enough obedience that he anointed him to be the next king of Israel. And we know the story. We know the history of this. But something great was birthed out of Hannah, and something great was birthed through the form of Samuel. But it came out of a season of restriction. Lori and I have something that we purposed in our heart. We're planning for all five of our grandchildren when they reach a certain age, and right now we think it's probably 13. But when they reach this age, we're going to take them individually on a trip with me and Lori and just one. You know, we do a lot of stuff with the big three, and we'll do stuff with the, you know, we're carrying them quail hunting in a couple weeks down in South Georgia, the big three, and they'll get, we feel like they're old enough to come and enjoy that. But we want to do a significant trip that's like a rite of passage for them when they turn like 13. Like when Sydney Hannah turns 13, and it may be 12, we'll see how the maturity level goes. But when they get to that level, that just you and Poppy and Gigi, and we're going to go do a significant trip. And it might be a trek to Machu Picchu. It might be a trek to in Nepal. But something that's very significant that would be a life-changing trip. Something where we feel like God can speak something significant to them. Something that it would be require effort and accomplishment on their part and all of that. And we've got this purpose in our heart. But, you know, Sydney Hannah's 9. I would like to do it next week, but she's not ready. She's not at a place to where I feel like she would be able to absorb and appreciate and properly process the weight of what we're trying to do in that trip. And so you know what I've done? I've got it in reserve. It's my dream. It's in our heart. We will accomplish it, but we have to wait until she can properly, we feel like, handle the weight and the significance of the trip. So y'all see what I'm saying about this? And I believe God has got this for every one of our lives. He's got it for your life, Robin. I hadn't got to hang out with you guys hardly at all since the pandemic. I missed that. You know, I loved Paul before he and Robin got married. Man, just when he just first came in, man, it's like God just did a knitting with him and the people of this house before God ever put them together. But how many years were you single before Paul came? 11. I knew it was a while. And I saw Robin, and she was patient, and she waited, and she waited, and she waited, and she's like, okay, God, you know, I'm ready, you know. I don't love being single. I'm ready. I know you've got somebody out for, and I'm ready. And God, in his infinite wisdom and his infinite, he could have given you somebody else. But he had someone in reserve for you. And he had you in reserve for Paul. And so when God's timing for the weight of it to be properly absorbed was there, then God brought that together. And we see the significance of that. But somewhere in the process, we get real impatient, don't we? We get real frustrated, and we get real aggravated. And we're like, I'm tired of wearing a stinking mask. I'm tired of not getting to travel international. I'm tired of this, and I'm tired of this restriction, and I'm tired of God seemingly having these restrictions in my life. And God, I'm ready to loose the fetters and let me go. And God says, I got something in reserve, though. And I'm waiting. If I rush it now, it would be not nearly as significant. Because me and Lori are going to Machu Picchu in April this year. And we're going to do a trek, and we're going to, part of it's going to be on horseback, and part of it's going to be hiking, and it's a 7-day trek, and we're going over the Salkantay Pass. It's like a 15,000 and something feet pass, and we're going over that, and we're doing this 7-day trek to Machu Picchu and all of that stuff. And could Sydney Hannah physically handle it this year? Yeah, she could. She's a good little athlete. She's tough. She's adventurous. She knows how to ride horses well and all of this stuff. And she could handle it this year. But if we carried her this year instead of when we feel like she's mature enough, and I'm not saying that's what we'll do with her. I'm just using that for example. If we carried her this year instead of when we feel like she's mature enough, you know what it would be doing? It would be wasting the weight of the seed. And God does not want to waste the weight of the seed in your life. He wants it to come and have the full effect that it's supposed to have. I've got a lot of grass I need to plant right now. We've got a lot of clearing that we've been doing over close to where Rhett and Harold are building their house and all of this stuff. And you know what I could do tomorrow? I could hook the plow up to the tractor, and I could go out and I could plow those fields up and I could get them smoothed out, and I could put seed on them and all of that stuff, Eric. But in reality, nothing great's going to happen out of it until March, because the soil's got to get a certain temperature in order for it to properly do what it's supposed to do. And if I did it right now, you know what I would be doing? I would be wasting the weight and the full effect of the preparation and the seed and fertilizer and all of that. So let's look at some scripture right quick, and I want to bring out a few points. I know you feel like, man, you done preached an hour. Come on, see it. It's been a few weeks. All right, so y'all bear with me. Verse 1. Now there was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Joram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zoph, an Ephrathite. And he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, the name of the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah, he gave a worthy portion. One of the translations, I think it's the New Living or the NIV, said that he gave her a double portion. So he gave her a double portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. The world, when God has got you in a season of restriction, the world is going to taunt you. The world is going to try to make you feel small. The world is going to try to make you feel inferior. Right now, in your faith, as a conservative, in the climate of our country, there are many, many, many voices out there that are trying to say that you're narrow-minded. They try to say that you're small. They try to say you're insignificant. They even will go as far as try to say that you're a bigot and everything else. And they will challenge your faith. And if you're a person of faith, then you're really unenlightened and you're stupid. I'm sorry, but that's a big and that's been out there earlier in the 80s and 90s. Religion really, really came across that if you were a Pentecostal, you were ignorant. You know, that if you're a Pentecostal, man, you just emotional and you're ignorant and all of that stuff. And now there's a climate that tries to say, because you're a person of faith, because you're a person that puts your trust in Jesus and Jehovah God, Yahweh, because you're conservative in your ideals and values and all of this, and you put weight in these things, the world will try to come in and say, man, you're insignificant. You're really, they try to put you in a box and say you're insignificant. And this was what was happening with Hannah. It said that her adversary provoked her sore for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he did so year by year, in verse 7, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Then said Elkanah her husband to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? And why eatest thou not? Why is thy heart grieved? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by the post of the temple of the Lord, and she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. And she vowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. And then we see in the scripture, for time's sake, I won't read all of this. Eli saw her over there pouring her heart out to the Lord. He saw her over there moving her lips and sound not coming out. He assumed she was drunk. He came up to her and he says, why don't you put away your drunkenness? You come into the house of God and you're intoxicated and all that. And we know the whole, man, I've preached this sermon before and we've heard it many, many times, drunk on hope. She said, I'm not drunk on alcohol. I'm drunk on hope. I'm coming in and I'm pouring my heart out to the Lord. And Eli, he properly responded, and he said, "Go in peace." And he said, "And the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him." And in verse 18 it says, "And she said, Let thy handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad." She left it at the altar, guys. Hannah came in and she left it at the altar. And she came in and she said, "I don't like this season of restriction." This is a season of restriction. The Lord closed her womb up. And she said, "I don't like this season of restriction, but Lord, I'm entrusting it to you. I'm giving it to you. Here's my petition. I believe and I know that there's seed in there." She didn't say it wasn't ever going to happen, although it had been several years. She said, "I believe and I know that there's seed in there. And when this comes forth, it's yours, Lord. It's yours, Lord." And Daniel could pray a similar prayer, and he said, "Lord, this stinks. I'm in captivity." You think about what Daniel endured. You think about what Nehemiah endured. These guys were, Daniel specifically, let's focus on him. You are brought out of a conquered country as a slave. He was castrated. So he lost his manhood in that sense. He was put into the king's court because he was a prince and educated. And he was a slave in a king's court. And every one of us could have got angry. We could have got bitter. We could have got mad at God. We could have said, "This is a lousy season of restriction. I don't like this. I'm tired of being in Babylon." And yet we see Daniel go down as being one of the greatest individuals in the Bible, one of the greatest individuals in the Old Testament. We saw him shaping culture. We saw him changing culture because he came in and he said, "Lord, I'm in a season of restriction, but you can flourish in this season of restriction. You can do something great in this season of restriction." And I dare say that none of us would know Daniel's name if Daniel had not been in the situation that he was in. If he had not been restricted in a foreign kingdom, none of us would have known his name. And he goes in and he flourishes, and we see him impacting kingdom and then impacting the next kingdom that comes. He outlived the kings that came through, whether it was Cyrus or Darius or whoever come through. And then we even go so far as a few weeks ago when we were talking about the Magi, and most scholars believe that the reason that the Magi were even looking for the Christ star or knew anything about the star that was revealed to them to announce the birth of Messiah was because of the teaching of Daniel of years earlier. And all of it was birthed out of a season of restriction. And so I ask you a question. This season of restriction that we find ourselves in, is it a thing that you're prospering in, or is it a thing that you're enduring? Is it a thing that you're just hanging on and I can't wait till we get through with this? Or is it a thing where we're coming in and saying, "God, how will you use this to shape me, to change me as a man, to change me as a woman? How will you use this to bring me to a place that I can catch up with these great promises and these dreams that you have for my life?" Hannah came to a tipping point right here. And in verse 11, she came in and she vowed a vow and she said, "Lord, don't forget your handmaid. Remember my affliction. God, I ask you move. And if you will bless me with a man child, he's yours. He's yours. If you can burst something out of this, it's yours. If you can burst something out of this, it's yours. If you can burst something out of this relationship, it's yours. If you can burst something out of these finances, it's yours." I know many, 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 many companies that have absolutely flourished this year. We're fortunate that we're connected with some of the outdoor industry. We do work for four different kayak companies. I think the kayak industry, I'm pretty close on this, the kayak industry experienced 160-something percent growth last year. 160-something percent growth last year in the midst of a pandemic. You know why? People couldn't go anywhere. They were tired of being constrained. So they said, "Let's go get on a river. Let's buy a kayak, go get on a river." My question is to these companies that are flourishing all this, is what will you do with this newfound blessing and abundance and wealth? How will you leverage that? Personally, we had a record year this year. How do we leverage that? How do I leverage that moving forward, Eric? Is it a thing where it's just like, oh, yeah, great? Or is it a thing that's like, okay, God, as you advance us, how do we advance the kingdom? As you advance us, how do we advance the kingdom? How do we impact lives? How do we come in and try to change cultures, whether it's a culture in Honduras? And I don't necessarily mean change culture. I mean elevate people. Or in Uganda, or in Dubai, or the Philippines, or wherever. How do we do that? How do we leverage that? And Hannah came in, and she said, here's a powerful thing about this, guys. As Hannah came in and she made this vow to God without consulting Elkanah, her husband. This was not a female-dominated culture. It was a male-dominated culture. Elkanah was her husband in that culture, her Lord. And the driving point in acceptance and beloved identity and all of those things is, can I produce a male heir? And she said, Lord, if I have a son, he's yours. I'm going to take him to the temple, and I'll leave him at the temple, and he can be. And then this wasn't abandonment. She said, I'll raise him to a point, but when he gets to that point, then I'm going to take him, and I will give him as a burn offering, not that she was going to kill him, I'll give him as a burn offering to serve in the temple continually. And she purposed that in her heart. And that was a tipping point. That was a tipping point. Because it was a tipping point for her, and I think it was a tipping point for God. Because God, she came to this place and God says, okay, now you caught up with my dream for you. Because the word said when she got up from that, it was almost like David when he was mourning for the loss of their child with Bathsheba. And then he got up and he bathed himself and he ate and his countenance changed and went out about governing the nation of Israel. And subsequently what got birthed out of that was Solomon. He lost the one child, but it was a tipping point where he said, okay, now I must move on. And Hannah got to this tipping point where she said, I've laid it all on the altar. I've made my vow to the Lord. You can have it all. I don't know what this looks like, but I get up in a place of peace. And that's what God wants us to be, guys. I don't know what next month is going to look like. I don't know what next year is going to look like. I don't even know what tomorrow is going to look like. But when I leave it to the Lord and say, God, it's all yours. God, my life is yours. My heart is yours. My family is yours. Then you get up from that in a place of peace. And it said that her countenance changed, and she ate, and she went home. And the word says in verse 19, and they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house to Ramah, and Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. She went home, and she had relations with her husband. I believe in a different place. In a place of peace. In a place of rest. In a place of trust. And because she had come into this tipping point and she had come in, she had caught up with God's dream for her when she came in and she had relations with her husband. You know what came out of that? Then all of a sudden, boom, she got pregnant. She got pregnant. And so I'm here to I don't want to use the word argue. I'm here to come in and encourage you in the fact that I am convinced that God has got all of these things for our life. Michael, God's got these things for our life. And he's purposed them in his heart. Just like I was talking about these trips for my grandchildren that I've already purposed in my heart. These things that I have designed for, I have dreamed for, because I know what kind of impact it can have in their life. And that's just one of many. But I'm waiting for them to catch up to that place. I'm waiting for them to catch up to that place. And God's got these things, and he's waiting for us to get there. And when Hannah got there, then all of a sudden it began to manifest. And I say some things are hidden, just waiting for us to catch up to them. I want to talk about things revealed. Those are things that are birthed, but I want to talk about things revealed. I see a couple significant things with Hannah that this season of restriction revealed to her. the first thing that I see in this was Hannah found out about her husband's heart for her in a season of restriction. I think this is huge. She could produce no heir for Elkanah. She couldn't even produce a girl. But the word talks about how much Elkanah loved her. She didn't fall out of favor. It said when they went to the temple to worship, when they went to Shiloh to worship, and they would come in, it said that Elkanah would give Peninnah a portion, would give her children a portion, and these portions were for them to come and offer to sacrifices. But it said that he would give Hannah, King James says a worthy portion. One of the translations says a double portion. So this season of restriction revealed to Hannah the heart of her husband. He comes in and he makes a statement to her. He said, am I not better to you than 10 sons? She knew she had her husband's heart. This is tremendous, guys. From a relational standpoint, this is tremendous. I told this to the worship team in the side room, and God spoke this to me. Elkanah loved Hannah more than he loved what she could produce. God loved Hannah more than he loved what she could produce. And I want to tell you this today, God loves you more than he loves what you can produce. Because we get caught up on the producing treadmill. That if I can produce a son, then he'll love me. If I can produce something good, he'll love me. If I can produce this, then he'll love me. One thing that I found, and I'll touch on this in just a moment, one thing that I found in this season of restrictions is so much of our life shifted and we weren't able to do the things that we normally do. We went to Honduras one time instead of four times. I didn't get it to come up and preach, and we're still not having Wednesday night services. I don't know what that's going to look like moving forward, but I wasn't coming into the house and preaching twice a week. You know, sometimes it was zero, sometimes it was one. So I wasn't producing. And when we did come, the crowds were small. Sometimes I would preach to an empty room, when we were just doing podcasts. And then sometimes I would preach to 20 people because people were sick or people were fearful for coming out or just felt like they were being smart. And that's fine. That's good. It's just an assessment. So I wasn't producing. And I found during this season of restriction that God loved me just as much in a season of not producing as he did in a season of producing. So Elkanah, it was revealed to her that Elkanah loved her more than he loved what she could produce. He was no Henry VIII. Y'all know your history. Henry VIII, King of England, had to have a son for an heir. Couldn't get one, so what'd he do? I'm going to charge you with sedition and heresy, so we're going to execute you and I'll get me another wife. You can't produce an heir. Oh, really? Okay, let's go to number three. You can't produce an heir. Let's go to number... Henry VIII was consumed with a male heir. Elkanah was consumed with a relationship with an awesome wife. It wasn't a thing of what they could produce. One of the things, and talking about the things that are revealed to us, one of the things that was revealed to me during this, I knew it, but it was reinforced to me during this pandemic, this season of restriction, all that stuff, is that Lori is enough for me. She's enough for me. We like to travel. We like to do adventurous stuff together, and all that kind of came to a grinding halt. We didn't travel any internationally this year. We didn't have any of those things to spice up. You know what I'm saying? to enhance the marriage and the relationship and all of this. And we found ourselves stuck and spending a lot of time together at 616 Rockmart Road. But instead of it driving me nuts and saying, man, I got to get to work or something, because that's... there was a revealing that she's enough. We find out a lot about I'm not saying like, not that, you know, Tyler, you need to go to the other room for a little while, dude. But I bet during this pandemic and this time together and this time stuck together a lot, and I bet there was a revealing of, you know what, I am in love with this guy. I am in love with him. And he is all I need. And Hannah found this out about Elkanah, his heart for her. Is I can't bear any children, and he's given me a double portion. He treats me so good that he can make the statement, am I not better to you than 10 sons? And that was revealed to her in a time, a season of restriction. And so I pray that we learn some things in this season of restriction. The second thing that I really see in this is that Hannah learned in this season of restriction that her faith and trust in God was not misplaced. The word says that God closed her womb, but her faith was still in Yahweh. Her hope and her trust was still in Yahweh. She didn't understand timing. She didn't understand what it looked like. She still felt like seed was in there because she said, Lord, if you'll bless me with a son, I'll give him to you. She still had hope that I'm not barren. And she learned in this season of restriction that my faith in him's not misplaced. And there are a lot of people, when their lives come screeching to a halt, all of a sudden they say, they equate God's goodness with stuff. And I'm not talking about just material stuff. I'm talking about stuff. And I hope during this season of restriction, there's been a revealing to us that our trust and our faith and our hope and our things that we place in Yahweh, they're not misplaced. I know I've seen that. So with that being said, I've got a few things that were revealed in me this year, and I want to share those real quickly. And I pray that it's stirring and causing you to think and reflect and changing your perspective somewhat. The first thing that I put, things that were revealed to me or in me in this season of restriction, is God is as large in the small things as he is in the big things. God is just as large in the little things as he is in the big stuff. The things that I wrote on this is church canceled. Worship conference canceled. Mission trips canceled. In the midst of all of this, coming together and joining and all of that stuff, God didn't disappear. I didn't go to worship conference, but God didn't disappear. There were weeks that I didn't get to come up here with you guys, and God didn't disappear. We didn't get to go to Honduras and make a big splash. And I always tell people, I say, when you go on wherever on a mission trip and do something, it's going to impact you as much as it impacts the people there. And it does, without fail. But even though we didn't get to do those big things, God didn't disappear. He was just as big in the small stuff as he is in the big stuff. And unfortunately, we need the big stuff to keep us going. You didn't get to go to a Georgia football game this year, did you, Eric? Y'all have always had, as long as I've known you, y'all had season tickets and all that. Georgia fan. Nick's a big Georgia, huge Georgia fan. You know, just consistent, diehard Georgia fans. Rhett's always been an Alabama fan ever since I've known him as a little boy. He didn't jump on the Saban bandwagon. He's always been there. But because you didn't get to go to Athens to a football game this year, did it make you any less of a Georgia fan? It didn't, did it? You didn't be like, well, I don't care nothing about college football anymore and all that, because you didn't go to the stadium with 100,000 people yelling and screaming and all that. I was reading about the Buffalo Bills playoff game yesterday, and they said that I think they said that they allowed 6,500 or 8,000 fans or something like that. It was a small number, but they had to have the negative COVID test and all that. But they let in about 6,000 fans, and the quarterback, which I like the quarterback for them, Allen, because he's an underdog, and everybody says that, you know, he's no way this guy's gonna make it and all of this stuff, and he's making it, and I like that, and he's a real conservative guy too. But he said it felt like there were 60,000 fans in there. And the energy that was created, and the reason I'm even saying that and tying in that correlation right there is a lot of times we feel like events, the big events, is what makes us and what keeps us. I have known men through the years that when it was a special occasion that with their wife, they went over the top. I mean, boy, they did it right. If it was anniversary, man, I'm going to make a big splash. If it was a birthday, I'm going to make a big splash. And there's nothing wrong with that. I've kind of been the guy that, you know what, I'm going to be a great husband to my wife 365 days a year. Not 2 days a year. Not 2 days a year and 1 week on vacation. Boy, I'm going to do it big. I took my wife to Hawaii. Guess what? I was good to my wife 365 days this year. And so often, and of course I see people when your life is just a series of bouncing from this big stimulus to this, or stimulation, this stimulation to this stimulation to this stimulation, this stimulation. If there's no substance in the middle, you really don't have anything. And one thing that that has been really, really reinforced to me this year is that God's just as big in the still small voice and the little things, and me walking on in the back pasture as He is if I'm at the Microsoft Theater with 7,000 people. Swinging from the chandeliers, and I, whew. Sometimes I feel the presence of God so overwhelming me when I come in here, and our 7, 8, however many people's on our worship team, I have to count it up in my head, are up here and there's nobody else in the room. Tammy will be at the soundboard, or Ambry will be at the soundboard, and they'll come in, and it's just His presence. And the house isn't full. There's nobody even here yet. And I'm like, God, You're just as big in this as You are at a Hillsong concert. And so that was revealed to me that God's just as big in the little things as He is the big things. I already said the second thing that I wrote down, I always said this, is my wife's enough. I've learned, and it's been revealed to me, that my wife is enough just in being my wife. And why I say that is it's exciting when I get my wife on steroids. What I mean by that, it's exciting when me and my wife are in the Cayman Islands together. So it's hard not to be in love when you're on vacation, right? I mean, you're eating out in Jackson Hole and the snow's falling and all of that. It's hard not to be like, whoo, man, this is magical and this is awesome and I got a great relationship and all of that stuff. But when that disappears and it gets to, yeah, we're cooking chicken and rice for dinner and I got to haul out the garbage and build a fire and take care of this and the dog chewed up a pillow and all of that stuff, then that's when you find out, is she enough? When she's got coronavirus for 2 weeks. And she don't look so hot and sexy. I had one morning I came in and Lori was like, dang, baby, you look rough. And I'm like, I got COVID. Thanks. She said, well, I'm just letting you know. But even in that, you know what? She wasn't scrolling farmersonly.com. I'd trade this one in for a newer model. So without the bling of 2020, I found out she's still enough. We like to watch cooking shows, and when you combine it with travel, we really like that. And we like Bobby Flay and Giada. I don't even know what Giada's like, De Laurentiis or whatever, little Italian girl and all. And they've got a show that they just did, and it's Bobby and Giada in Italy. And they spent a couple months in Italy, and they were in Rome, and they were in Tuscany, and they were cooking and doing their thing and all of that. And they're good-looking people, you know, both of them good-looking and all of this stuff and everything. And, you know, and they're bouncing around Italy, and we love Italy and all this, and we're watching everything and all of that. And I'm sitting here watching this, and, you know, and they're doing their thing, and they're all cute and all of this stuff and everything. And something just... I looked over at Lori and I said, I bet neither one of them would go on a backpack sheep hunt with me in the Northwest Territories. Of course, she was like, you dang straight they wouldn't. But I will. The reason I say that and bring that, and that's cute and all, and that was true. I mean, I made that statement and all this stuff. But a lot of times, if it's not bling, then we don't think it's enough. If it's not flashy, we don't think it's enough. If it's not exciting, we don't think it's enough. If it's not, man, we can't go on vacation this year because of finances or whatever. Is she still enough? Is she still enough? And that's one thing that has been reinforced this year. She's enough. I hope it's reinforced in you that she's enough. Because there'll come a day when she may look like dang it. And she'll get pregnant and gain 40 pounds. You know? I think Lori hit 50 with one of ours. It was a lot. Easy. I didn't say you kept it. I said you hit it. You see what I'm saying in this though, guys? God's not always going to be the big thunder excitement of, woo! Stephanie Gretzinger's leading me in worship. I've been with Stephanie Gretzinger in worship many times, and I promise you, I feel the Lord stirring just as much when Linda Carter's leading me in worship or Madeline Siegel's leading me in worship. Stephanie ain't got nothing on you, Madeline. She's awesome. God's just as big in the small. And she's enough in the little. Two more things. The third thing that I was revealed to me this year is home is good. Can I say that again? Home is good. Home is good. We love to travel. I love to see the world. I think the world has amazing places, and my goal is to see all of it. But 616 Rockmart Road is amazing. We were in Utah, and we love Utah. It's one of our favorite places, and we were in Utah a couple weeks ago, and we started getting symptoms of COVID and all of that stuff, and all we could do was sit here, and we're looking on the snow-capped mountains, and it's beautiful and all of that stuff. We couldn't enjoy restaurants because food didn't taste good to us. We had no appetite and all of these things. But all I could do was be like, I wish I was home. When I was sick, you know what? I didn't say, man, I wish I was on a beach in Hawaii right now. When I was sick, I said, I just want to be home. I was looking into flights. Can I change? I was looking. Can I change my flight and get home quicker? Home's good. Because home's where God's planted us. You'll come to the realization, I'm not saying you'll be here your whole life, Haven. You may be. Mayberry ain't so bad. Mayberry's not bad. I wouldn't trade it for anywhere because this is where God's planted me. This is where God's planted me. West Georgia's where God's planted me. The United States, I'm going to look bigger. The United States is where God's planted me. I've always had this thing where it's like, man, I got to go to foreign countries. And there's that's good and there's value in that. But I want to tell you something, guys. We live in an amazing country. One thing this season of restriction has done, we've not been able to travel internationally. So you know what we've done? We traveled to some places that we wouldn't normally travel to in the United States or haven't traveled to in the United States yet. And we found them to be amazing. The reason I say all of this is one of the promises in Isaiah 62, and Isaiah 60, 61, and 62 are full of God's promises to us. And one of the most amazing promises that I find in all of God's Word is in Isaiah 62, and God comes in and God says, I will marry myself to your land. But I believe that there is an unspoken if you then I that goes with that. I believe that the Holy Spirit has spoke to me and said that God will not, in fact, God cannot marry himself to our land until we marry ourselves to our land. God cannot, and the reason I spent this time talking about she's enough, God cannot marry himself to your marriage until you marry yourself to your marriage. God can't marry himself to your family until you marry yourself to your family. If I had kids like yours, it'd be good too. Marry yourself to your kids. Marry yourself to your son. Marry yourself. Home is good. Small's good. Simple's good. This is good. We're small. This is good. This is home. Because God's planted me here. And I'm going to flourish and I'm going to run as deeper roots as I can until God says, all right, I'm planting you somewhere else. I have found that God doesn't move us around near as much as we move ourselves around. We've been there and done that. May not physically, but we've done it emotionally. Come on. Usually we do it emotionally before we do it physically. Or a lot of times we'll do it emotionally when we don't do it physically. Home is good. Home's good. All right, last thing. 2020, a season of restriction. I have come to the revelation or it has been reinforced in me. I need the body. He's enough and she's enough, but I need y'all. I need my faith to collide with your faith. I need my vision to collide with your vision. I need my passion to collide with your passion. I need my worship to collide with your worship. I need that. I need that. I need the body. God did not intend for us to be solo. I'm not saying church is the end all. But I need you guys. And y'all need me. I had a real aha moment recently. It was about 2 weeks ago. It was recent, about 2 weeks ago. And it was so tangible. It was the Holy Spirit. It was so tangible. It was good for me. It was really, really good for me. I had hit a little bit of a rut. You know, I I had started getting sick. You know, I was out of church one Sunday and I started getting sick, wasn't feeling good, and, you know, I was like, man, I had to get some word. And I'm a big podcast guy. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of preaching podcasts. I listen to a lot of worship. I listen to business podcasts. I'm a big podcast guy. I think you get a lot of information in. You know, I listen to Motley Fool and all this stuff. You know, I'm real big on all this. But I had this strong need, besides me reading the Bible or besides me praying, I had this strong need. I said, I need somebody's faith in this moment to really collide with me and to activate something in me. And so I flipped on a podcast, and I'll be honest with you, it's irrelevant to who it was. I think it might have been Damon. And I listened to all of Bethel and all of Damon and different ones and all of this stuff. But I think in that instance, it might have been Damon. And I listened to that podcast, and it hit me in such a way that it activated something in me. And the Lord said, you need the body. Yes, you've got a relationship with me. Yes, you're beloved. Yes, you find me in the small places. Yes, she's enough. But there are things in you that other people will activate. And there's stuff in you that God will use me to activate. And there's stuff in you that God will use Tyler in worship to activate. You know how I know you're a true worshiper, and I felt this real strong for a couple, 3 years now, that God's just let me see it, is more often than not, there's genuine joy in you when you're worshiping in the Lord up here. He lets me see genuine joy in you. It's not just when you're leading a song. It might be Noah singing a song that he wrote, or it might be Madeline and she's so worshiping the Lord. But there's genuine joy in you when you're worshiping the Lord on this stage up here. And you know what that does, Tyler? That activates something in me. And it's been reinforced the reality that I need that in my life. I need that in my life. As I was listening to that sermon, it was probably about a week ago, my time gets all skewed, probably about a week, week and a half ago, as I was listening to that sermon, I've tangibly felt something being activated in my faith, man. I tangibly felt it. So much point that it was like, whoa. And then it was just like, man, this is good. And I don't remember what he was preaching. I can't even tell you what it was. I can tell you the sermons I've listened to recently. But that particular moment, I can't tell you what he was preaching. All I know is I felt something being activated in me. And God said, that's why I have different parts of the body, because you need it. So I pray during this season of restriction that another thing that's been revealed is that you need this. I was talking to Randy the other day, and he's been battling with COVID and stuff and recently, and then he worked the whole month of December with the post office delivering all Amazon stuff and all. He told me when they were out in Utah with us for a few days, he told me, he says, man, I need the body. He says, I need it. Because in a season of restriction where, because of work, because of sickness, he couldn't come, it heightened the revelation, I need this. I need this. I need not just the gathering together, I do need that, but I need all of it. I need the Bill Johnsons in my life. I need the Chris Bollettons in my life. I need the Damon Thompsons in my life. I need the James Siegels in my life and the Nick Whites in my life. I need the Scots in my life. So I pray that in this, that there are things that have been revealed to you. And If you're like, man, I've just been in survival mode and I've had my head down, then pick your head up. And start looking around and see what God can reveal to you. Because he will reveal some things that will change your perspective. He will reveal some things that will change your perspective. So I just want to encourage y'all with that. Y'all stand to your feet. So as we walk this thing out, and when I say this thing, I'm not talking about the pandemic. I'm talking about any season of restriction. It might be a physical restriction. It might be a financial restriction. It might be an emotional restriction. God may close some things up for your benefit. What's been revealed to you and what has the potential to be birthed out of this? How's your life going to look different? How's your faith going to look different? How's your love going to look different? How's your hope going to look different? How's your stewardship going to look different? You know, one thing I talked about when I said I need this, and I talked about I need your faith and I need your passion and I need your worship and all that. You know, one thing that I need is I need your faithfulness. Because you know what that does? It builds faithfulness in me. When I see the faithfulness in your life, it builds faithfulness in me. That's one thing I've tried to... Some of y'all that I text on some stuff and things, James, I don't know if you've noticed, but some of the texts like I'll send to you, or, you know, like I sent James one last week after church talking about how awesome worship was and a good word and all that stuff, and I tagged it then. I said, thank you for your and your family's faithfulness. I need your faithfulness because it activates faithfulness in me. It helps me stay the course. It helps me run the race. Y'all ever noticed in marathons how they run in packs? There'll be a breakout at the end. But for a big majority of the race, you look at the Tour de France, a bicycle race, and you will see them in little packs. Some of them the pace will be much faster than others, but they always pack together. And the reason they pack together is because it's easier to run this race when I'm running it with somebody else. Because if I get tired, I look over to my right and I see Robin and she's still running the race. And she gets tired and she looks over at me and she sees I'm still running the race. And we don't have to because we're not married. Me and Lori are yoked. Me and Robin aren't yoked in that sense. But you know what? We're yoked in our faith. It's huge. It's huge. And that's not just for me. That's for her. She needs the faithfulness in my life. And my grandchildren grow up without question saying, you know what? Poppy and Gigi, you know who they are? They just serve the Lord. It's a given. They're kingdom people. And you know what it does? It establishes their identity. Because they're kingdom people. You know what we are? We're kingdom people. I guarantee you the thought has never entered their mind, am I a Christian?
It's just who we are. And they'll all have to make that decision and follow Christ themselves. But they're growing up in a thing of, you know what? We're Christians and we're kingdom people. And we love each other. And we serve each other. And we give. And we're faithful in everything we do. So I bless y'all with that today. I hope that some of this stirred some things in you. Hope it activated some things in you. Hope it challenged some areas in your life. That we don't just survive seasons of restriction, but we allow Samuels to be birthed out of them. Because greatness can be birthed out of these things. Can be birthed out of these things. So, y'all be blessed with that. I love you guys. We'll see everybody next Sunday. Y'all have a safe week. And, man, I just pray y'all flourish in everything you do. We'll see you guys.